Hey, I'm Robin. That's our way of putting everybody at ease. We've all got issues. We're all jacked up in some way. This is a church for everyone, and good to see you here. We're in a series called Greater Than. The good news is God's greater than my issues. He's greater than all my problems, and he's greater than my anger. Again, I'm Robin. I'm the pastor here, and today the topic is anger. And grab your note sheet, if you would, right in the beginning of your program. It should be in there. Take a look. The big idea, God helps me process my anger. We always look at something in the Bible to give validity to the talk, and so today we're going to look at this scripture. If you see in the note sheet, God helps me process my anger. When you're angry, do not sin, and be sure to stop being angry before the end of the day. And wouldn't it be nice if every time you're angry, it could just be over by the end of the day? But the truth is sometimes I can be angry day after day, week after week, month after month, even years later, I can still be mad. We've all had that happen where we thought we were way past something, and then we see the person again, and all the anger just comes roaring back, and you're like, it's almost like it. Time gives you relief, but at the same time, it compresses the anger. And then you get back in a similar situation, and it just comes all roaring back. It hasn't been gone. And today we're going to talk about God is greater than our anger. And notice it doesn't say if you get angry, it says when you get angry. And angry is very, very normal. And it's not a sin, by the way. It says when you get angry, don't sin. But it's not a sin to be angry. Although how I get angry and maybe how you get angry looks different than how other people get angry. And what I do and what you do when you get angry is very different than how other people get angry. It's still not a sin. It's an emotion. The Latin word for emotion means movement. And when I get angry, it certainly starts moving me somewhere. Now the question is, where will it move me and what type of choices will I make while I'm on the move, when I'm angry? We have a kind of a diagram we want to show you today of what the movement of anger looks like, and it's in your note sheet. And at East Lake Church, even the guys write on their note sheets, and so awesome. Don't hand it to your girlfriend, your wife, and says, here, you take care. And she's your wife, not your secretary or your girlfriend. So write on your own note sheet. We have some things to fill in there. And here's the thing to know about angry. I'm angry, I'm mad. It's always a second emotion because something has happened to cause the anger. There's a root cause. So just jot in, I'm hurt about something, or I'm afraid about something, or I'm frustrated about something. When my kids were little, my son was small, and he was getting into all of the cupboards in the kitchen. He'd get in there and get the pots and pans out, and he'd come in and be playing with a huge butcher knife, you know. It's just like, oh, good boy, you know. And so my wife said, put some safety latches on. Oh, I don't know if you ever had the privilege of doing that, but I kept forgetting because I wasn't getting them lined up correctly. I would forget that the drill, I'd have it on reverse, and then when I would go to put the next screw in, I would forget that it was on reverse. So I'd hit the thing and fly up out of the way, you know, there's words that come to your mind at that point, none of them godly. Of course, you know, and so I'm doing this, and of course, now here's what's really helpful is my wife hears a screw ricochet all around the kitchen. Did you forget to switch the drill again? No, I'm stupid. I like it this way, you know. It's just, frustration can cause you to get angry, too. It doesn't have anything to do with anybody. Maybe you had a friend that you'd help him work on his car in high school, and you got to see frustration to get angry. And so then, now I'm angry. I got hurt. I fear, or they can be some combination. And now I'm angry. And if at some point I don't redirect it, if I don't settle what caused my anger, it just keeps moving. And now I'm bitter. And if I don't deal with bitterness, I can become very, very aggressive. Maybe you have someone in your life and you have to walk on eggshells with them. You say, you know, honey, are you mad? No! Well, you're raising your voice. I'm not shouting! It's like, you have anger issues. Or maybe you have the other kind of person that they get very indifferent. And they just, are you okay? Yes. Are you sure? You seem a little angry. I'm fine. And you know they're not fine. They're just like a hand grenade sitting there. They look fine until the pin comes out and they explode. It's sort of like skunks and turtles. One author puts the angry people into the skunk pile. Man, you know when the skunk is expressing itself. It's firing off all over the place. That's its answer. Just spray everybody down. Keep them away. Protect myself. And then there's the turtle. The turtle pulls back inside to protect itself. It just tries to tuck everything and be quiet and kind of blend in. And that's the turtle. And I don't know why skunks and turtles always get married. But they do. And it's hard to understand that we express our anger very differently. Now it says when you're angry, don't sin. So at some point I cross over a line. And so we have a line you can draw in. There it is right there. Sin. At some point it becomes a sin. Now before you come to church today and think, oh God, they're going to talk about sin. Like, don't freak out. Because let me tell you where the word came from. It started out in the Olympics, way back in the day, the Greek Olympics, over 2,500 years ago. They would have archery contests, and they would set these targets way, way out there, and the archers that were competing in the Olympics would shoot, they'd have the bow and the arrow, and they'd have contests, and they'd fire off these arrows at the target, and there would be a judge down there watching the arrows come in, and if they hit the target, then great, but if they missed the target, it was called a sin. And the judge would actually yell out, sin, because they'd missed the target. And that's what sin is. It's just missing the mark. It's firing off an arrow, and it doesn't go straight, and it fires off into somewhere else. And, we got the way God does things, and we just miss it. That's a part of all of our lives. The Greek word, harmatia, means to miss the mark. And at some point, anger can cause me to just be firing off arrows all over the place, and none of them are hitting the mark, but they can hit a lot of other people. They can ricochet off and hit me. And that's all sin is. It's just I'm missing the mark. It's not a word you have to run from. It's not something you have to try to avoid. But there is a way to do something about it. And it can be an issue. Look in your notes. There's a scripture I want to read to you. See that none of you misses the grace of God. And that's the problem. See, I think the answer is just keep firing off arrows. When the answer is put the bow down and turn to Jesus and say, I need grace. I'm not doing good. I am really pissed off. And it's got the best of me. But I don't do that. I just keep shooting away. I'll get that target soon. And I miss God's grace at that time. Because it's not about keep shooting. It's about stop shooting. Stop firing and just turn and say, I can't hit the target, God. Wouldn't it be great if we just could understand God from the perspective it's okay to just stop and just say to him, I can't hit the target in my marriage. I can't hit the target with my kids. I can't hit the target at work. I've got a bad habit. I can't hit the target. God, I can't hit the target. And we know that Jesus would move towards us and say, but maybe we can. That's all sin is. Don't be afraid of it. It's no match for you and the Lord. But if I miss it, it says it becomes bitter, and it causes trouble and defiles many. And it's a hard thing to understand, bitterness, that it can cause all kinds of things. And so when I become bitter, it influences my entire life, because you can't compartmentalize bitterness. I mean, it would be nice if my heart was like one of those organizers that you can put into your closet, which most women like, not all, but most. But, like you put them in your closet, and everything is organized in there. It's all organized. Your shoes don't touch your dresses, and your dirty clothes are here. And it's all, you open it up, and you're like, wow, everything is in its place, and nothing is touching anything else. It's all organized. everything has a compartment, and I can compartmentalize. It doesn't touch any my shoes and my. Do girls wear nylons anymore? My nylons, they're not touching, you know. And but our heart isn't like that at all. You can't compartmentalize. So let me show you what it looks like. So let's say I'm going to make some chili. Okay, so I got my chili bowl here today. And I brought a whole bunch of stuff to make chili with. I got a little stir thing. And so let's say, for starters in my chili, I'm going to put in some onions, because I like those. I'll put those all in. And put all those in there. And then I have some of these. I got my beans and everything in there. I'm making chili for the guys. They're going to come over and watch the game a little later. So I put this in there, too. There's all the tomatoes. I feel like a cooking show right now. Everything's all made for me. Stir those around. Got that. And then some celery. Got some celery here, which I don't even know why God made it. It doesn't taste like anything. But there's that. Some of that in there. And put the celery around like this. And then I'm making chili, so I gotta have jalapenos. Okay. So I have to share this with my wife, so I put in her portion. And then I lose my self-discipline. I put in my portion, and I stir that all around. Guys are coming over, we're gonna watch the game. Girls are gonna do a chick flick downstairs, fall asleep under a blanket. So that's that. And I got my chili going. And I want, it's all cooking together. It's all mixing together. And I got it all cooking up there. And if you're really imaginative, you can smell it coming out over there. And there's going to be cheese. And there's going to be some cheesecake to go with the chili, too. And I have it all going right here. It's all going. Then I think, oh, wait a minute. Wait, I forgot. And then I said, there's one more ingredient. One more ingredient. And I pull out a greasy bicycle chain. And I drop that in there. And you start to freak out. No, 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 don't worry. Don't worry. Don't worry. I'm going to stir it. Make it better. And you're watching me thinking the boy's gone mad. And I let it cook for a little while. Then I step away and I say, who wants to go? And then someone with guts says, I ain't having any of that. It's just, that's going to be terrible. There's a greasy bicycle chain in there. And I'm like, how dare you? How dare you? I have 10 or 11 ingredients in there and four that are secret ingredients in my family. That's 15 ingredients in there. Do you think one greasy bicycle chain is going to ruin everything else inside? Get up here, boy, or give me your man card. And you're like, well, what would you be like? Because everything inside of you is saying it's ruined because of the greasy bicycle chain. And that's what we're saying about bitterness. That when your anger becomes bitter, it moves all through your life. It touches everything in my life. And it goes everywhere. And I could try to kind of push it aside. Okay, I'll get you some without any greasy bicycle chain. But you just cannot. Because it's everywhere. And that's what bitterness causes. And yet, God is greater than my anger. So let's take a look. There's three things I want to talk about. The first one is we can admit our anger. We're going to jump right in the middle of this story about Jesus. Let me just read this portion to you. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother, whose name is Lazarus, would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger welled up. Would you circle that? And they're talking about Jesus, the Messiah, Jesus Christ. A deep anger welled up. Jesus is mad. Within him, and he was deeply troubled. Where have you put him? He asked them. Jesus was still angry as he arrived at the tomb, a cave with a stone rolled across his entrance. Roll the stone aside, Jesus told them. Story about Jesus being mad, which, you know, I don't know if you see him that way, but Jesus is a person, and he has emotion, and he's angry. Here's the story. He'd been on tour. He'd been doing a speaking tour for a while, and it had caught him by surprise, the crowds that had come out to see him, because Jesus was just a humble carpenter. He didn't go through college. He didn't do public speaking. He didn't have a book tour to do. He was just a humble Jewish carpenter, and he goes out, and he starts telling someone about this God in heaven that loves them, and he realizes that it's unique and nobody's heard it. So he starts to teach in the temple square, and he's on street corners, and he has a very simple message. God accepts and loves you, and he wants to be with you right where you're at. And he's amazed at these crowds that start to come because it's so contrary to the religion of the day. The Jewish religion of the day said, you better get your act together, and then maybe you can be with God. And Jesus comes and says, God wants to be with you, and he'll help you get your act together. And these crowds just start coming around, and he's not ready for it. And there's all these people coming to listen to him talk, and he's not ready for it. And he's going from these different villages and towns and then cities, and it's all happening. And right in the middle of it, someone brings him a note and says, one of your best friends, Lazarus, is really, really sick, and he might die. I had a friend 3 weeks ago that lost his sister, and he had a similar experience where someone called him and said, complete emergency, your younger sister's in the hospital, and she might die. If you've ever been through any emergency, accident, that's Jesus. And remember, he's a person. And so now he's confronted with, well, do I finish with this crowd and these people? Do I continue talking? There's a pressure building now, and there's a frustration. It's like, what do I do with this crowd, and what do I say to him? But my friend needs me. And now the anger didn't start where I just read you. Anger is already beginning to build because Jesus doesn't, he's not certain, what should I do? And you might be angry because back in your past, you weren't sure what you should do either. And you started to get frustrated. It's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm between a rock and a hard place. I'm damned if I do, damned if I do. Which direction do I go? And you start to get angry. It's like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And that's Jesus. And so he decides to finish the speaking tour. And while he does, his friend dies. Now put yourself in his shoes. Don't you think you'd second guess yourself? He's like, oh man, I thought I heard God. I thought I made the right choice. I thought God would keep him alive until I got there. When's the last time you really believed you were following the Lord and you were on that path and something happened on the path to make you think, this can't be the path then? But I was so sure this was the path God wanted me to be on. But things like this don't happen on the path, and you start to get angry. Jesus is angry before he ever gets here. And then catch this. The sister runs out to Jesus and essentially says, it's your fault. So you're already struggling with your decision. You don't know for sure what you should have been done. How many people have been through this before where the relationship breaks up and it's just like crazy, and then someone is kind enough the first time then to see them to say, it's your fault that the breakup happened. And you just want to kick them where it counts. Because you're already frustrated, you're already angry, you're not sure if you did the right thing or not, and then they blame you. And for those with kids, it comes there, you try to make the best decision with your kids, and then it goes down the road, and you go, oh man, I don't know if that was the right choice, and then someone comes and says, well, what were you thinking? You don't parent your kids like that. And you're frustrated, and you're angry, and that's where Jesus is. Mary comes up and says, Jesus, if you would have come here, remember, you're the miracle worker guy. Remember, you can just zzz, 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 and everything changes. And now my brother's dead. What if they sprinkle in a little bit? You didn't care enough. Are you starting to get a picture why Jesus might be angry? Because he's mad now. And some of us can relate. We're angry too, because we've been in something similar. And I'm just saying all of it just to do this for you today, to give you permission to admit you're mad. It's the starting place. I'm just telling you a story about Jesus so you can cut yourself some slack. And when you get angry, you can just admit it. You don't have to feel less good, less religious, less Christ-following. You can just say, well, the person that I'm following got mad, and it's okay for me to get angry too. I'm just wanting you to have the right to admit that you're mad. Because Jesus admits he's mad. Now, the second thing in your notes, write in, we can understand our anger. Here's what the Bible says. Someone with a quick temper does foolish things, but someone with understanding remains calm. Boy, I understand that. And let's put the diagram back up for just a moment. Because there it is right there. And at some point, we have to try to get back to the source and understand what has got me so angry. What's happened? Where did this begin? See, anger, when you're angry, it's part of a process. And you can go back to the beginning of the process and find out the source. But let me tell you why I never do, because I get so stuck in telling the story. Has that ever happened to you when you're angry? You just tell the story, whoever will listen. Sometimes even strangers, you'll just tell them the story. You just keep telling everybody why you're angry and what they did and that no good, dirty person. And you know, you just tell the story, and I tell the story. And I never process anything, because telling the story is not processing, because it never goes back to the beginning and lands anywhere. It's just it proclaiming the news. Just like a newscaster on TV. Have you ever seen them? Sometimes they'll say the most horrific thing, and you're like, is that even affecting you saying that? And then I look at myself sometimes, and I tell my story about how angry I am, and I say, is this even affecting me telling this story? Or have I told it so many damn times that it's just words now? I'm not processing anything. Oh, my dad that wasn't there for me when I grew up, and he didn't love my mom, and what would my life have been like if he'd have played catch with me? Talking about my own story, and I just have told it so many times, I could almost on cue, here comes the bad part, listen. I'm not processing anything because I haven't started anywhere. In my job, a person started off and they brought everybody into the room and they're welcoming him during a meeting, and he stood up, what you need to know about me is I hate my ex-wife. I was like, whoa. Wow, that's an amazing way to... We all got to drink some of the bitterness. He was a stranger to us. The story is not processing. And I can get stuck in the story and tell it 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 and tell it. I haven't processed anything. I haven't gone back to the person that hurt me and said, hey, listen, we have to talk because what you did, right or wrong, has hurt me. And now I'm angry, maybe even bitter. And this is difficult, and I don't even want to be here, but I want to talk this out and get somewhere different with you. When you're hurt, you need healing. When you're afraid, you need security. And when you're frustrated, you need support. And if you'll go back to where it originates and get some healing, then the anger dissolves. And if you'll go back to where you're afraid and get some support or some security, support when you're frustrated, the healing can begin. The anger can get resolved. Now let's look at the third thing. We can redirect our anger. Now, right at the end of the story, let's read it. After Jesus had said this, he shouted as loudly as he could, Lazarus, come out. He's still steaming. Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out. Strips of cloth were wound around his feet and hands, and his face was wrapped with a handkerchief. Jesus told them, free Lazarus and let him go. And here's the point. I guess Jesus could have set Mary down and said, listen, girlfriend, and gone off on her. I guess he could have sat himself down and gone off and just berated himself and beat himself down. And why didn't I know? I should have went and got Lazarus. And obviously God wanted to do a miracle, and I'm yakking in front of this crowd. What does that say about me? He could have beat himself up. He could have hit an innocent person. He could have gone to one of his friends and said, why didn't you tell me? You should have known I should have left. You know, could have done all that. But instead, he decides to solve the problem. He just goes up to the tomb and he says, well, I'm here now. Do you know what anger, it tries to trick me into, if I make a start, it won't matter. Everything's screwed up now. I've wrecked it now. When is the last time you've thought that? You've already been through a divorce and you meet someone that seems pretty good. I've already wrecked it now. I've already soiled my life. I've already done something that is so bad. So there's no sense beginning. And all Jesus really does is he says, okay, well, I'm here now. Obviously, people are disappointed in me. I'm not sure about anything. I'm really super angry, but I can start now. Now I can start. And when you start, here's the thing. When you begin, when you come back to the source of it, what happens is, when you decide to redirect it, that's when you find out you need Jesus. I mean, when you face it all and you're in the very, very beginning again, that's when you find, you won't turn to him until you're at the beginning and you go, oh man, I am going to need the Lord. And I wonder what it was like for him to stand in front of that tomb and say, roll the rock away. And I wonder what it was like for him to yell out into Lazarus to try. But he's there. And he's saying, okay, God, I'm here now, regardless of what's happened. I need you now. Listen to this. These children were lined up at the cafeteria for a Catholic elementary school lunch. At the head of the table was a large pile of apples. A nun made a note and posted it on the apple tray. Take only one. God is watching. Further along the lunch line at the other end of the table was a large pile of chocolate chip cookies. A child had written a note. Take all you want. God's watching the apples. Sounds eerily like me when I was a kid. Here's my point. Sometimes it seems like God is just watching me and not with me. He's just watching me going, that he's not going to run back to the tomb with me. That he's not going to stand with me as the rock rolls away. And as I get hit by all the pressure and the smell coming out of the tomb and everything that's going, you know, I just think he's watching. He's far away. He's just watching my life, wondering, how he'll do this time. Probably screw up again. Get ready, angels. We'll have to bail him out again. I think God's watching me instead of being with me. And religion can do that if you're not careful. Churches can do that if you're not careful. Next thing you know, you're all about your religion or you're all about your church and whatever. It could be whatever. It could be the religion of the thumbnail. Who cares? I'm just saying it's not about Jesus. Listen to this. All summer, the little boy saved his money to buy a ticket to see the circus. He could hardly wait to see the lion, the tigers, the jugglers, and the clowns. Finally, the big day came, and he raced to the middle of town to watch the circus arrive. He looked in amazement as the animals in brightly colored wagons went by. As he watched, a stubby little clown ran towards him and held out his hand. The boy instantly pressed his ticket into the clown's hand and ran home to find his dad. Dad, Dad, the boy yelled. I went to the circus. I saw everything, and a real clown took my ticket. His father scooped him up in his arms and said, oh, son, you didn't see the circus. You only saw the parade. This is the parade, and it's awesome. It's not Jesus. Because when you come face to face with what has you so angry, and it's become bitterness, a prayer ain't going to get it done. Only Jesus will. And he stands like this. You know, it's no mistake that he died on a cross with his arms open wide. It's the eternal symbol to all of us. And that's who you need when you begin to process your anger. You turn to him. Because he's greater than your anger. Now look at the bottom line. My anger can have a good outcome. And that's the hope today. Come into the gathering time and you hear all about it. And the hope is you leave and go, okay, it doesn't have to be like this. It can be better than this. Me and Jesus and I, something good can happen for me. I process the anger. The Bible says good people bring good things out of the good stored in their hearts, but evil people bring evil things out of the evil they've stored in their hearts. Again, it's this, is the heart. And what's inside of it. And there's a lot of good in there. But when this is in there, amazingly, Jesus can get it out. And then it's good again. Listen to the last part of the Bible. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. And would you do something with me? Could we read that out loud, just a way of saying it to ourselves and please don't leave me hanging, reading all by myself. So like your outdoor voices, like your kids need you to say something loud to them. Say it with me. Here we go, 1, 2, 3. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. He says it over us. He can turn it into good. Here's a wonderful example of it. A woman talking. I watched the salesman carrying box after box of shoes to a teenager and her mother. At each demand made by her daughter, the mother nodded. At first, a feeling of unease tugged at me. Then a vivid scene raced through my mind, an incident from my childhood. I could see my mother telling me that there was no money for the shoes I needed. But there was enough money to buy her strings for her precious violin, I responded in anger. She turned her face away. The memory startled me. I was amazed. I was still bitter at my mom after all these years. I gathered my purse and packages and walked out of the store. Why this anger, I wondered. Why am I still replaying that incident? I love my mom, I understand. We didn't have the money. I'm 43 years old. I thought I was past this. Irritated and annoyed, I drove home. In our garage, and listen to this part, I sat in the car and I prayed. Lord, I don't want this anger anymore. Please take the bitterness from me. Feeling calmer, I collected the mail and saw a letter from my mother. And then I noticed that she had put a little heart on the envelope. I opened it and I read it. My dear daughter, the other day I was tuning my violin for a concert and I realized I'd had it for 65 years. All those years with my violin. Many a time when I thought I could not handle raising you children, I turned to my violin, praying for the strength and the patience and the understanding. I remember once when we had no money to buy you shoes. The only pair you had gave you blisters. I still feel bad that you had to wear your brother John's shoes. I'm sending you a check, and I want you to buy yourself the prettiest pair of shoes you can find. And mind now, don't you spend this on the children or someone else, because you're my very special daughter. And I love you, Mom. Boy, God can show up, can't he? and he will for you. Because he's greater than my anger. And if you process it with Jesus, he's not dead. He's not a historical figure that had a bunch of cool ideas and he's dead now. We can go visit his grave. There's no grave. He's alive. And he's not watching. He's with you. He's with us.